Bruno, can you share a short introduction to your experience and role at Danaher?
Yeah, for sure I can do. I've been with Danaher more than 3 years, especially working for Leica Biosystems in the cancer diagnostics platform. There I was responsible for logistics and distribution across EMEA as a regional director. And on top, I've been a member of the global T&L steering committee for all OpCos.
So you were head of logistics for Leica, but also involved in a European-wide logistics team.
Exactly. When it came to the Leica company, Leica at those days had a sales turnover of roughly 1 billion with multiple sites from Australia, China, Singapore, plenty of sites in Europe and the US and also Mexico and Canada. And my sphere was EMEA.
Tell me back to when you first joined Danaher then. So you walk into the company. What was the training process like?
Well, the training process was pretty interesting because normally all the Danaher companies have some kind of an immersion plan, right? But for me, when I came, I was from day number one on policy deployment as we had the idea to transform the company. And my task was to bring in the related cost reductions to finance the rest. Yeah. So my training has been pretty limited, but for sure over the time, I needed to do some mandatory courses, some framework in the DBS, for example, or in the PSP environment.
What really surprised you about the culture at Danaher when you first joined?
When I joined the company and also later on, what really surprised me was the situation that everything was really related to Danaher Business System, to the DBS. DBS is some kind of a lean methodology, like the one from Toyota a little bit. And also what really surprised me was that this company was extremely focused on numbers. So numbers talk and really with all the relevant consequences. Yeah, this was pretty new from my situation.
And why is the culture unique in the industrial world?
In my opinion, it is unique. Because no matter who enters the company, everybody, whether he's a manager or a department leader or even a president of a company, has to learn the DBS system or at least the basics and also apply, for example, the PSP tool, problem solving, as the language. Yeah, and this is really unique. It goes from the strategy down to the Hoshin Kanrin, so the deployment, policy deployment, really, and down to the daily management. So it's totally consistent. This is also, in my opinion, unique because what I've seen in very other companies and many industries, people have tons of indicators and matrix to deal with it, but they're not so really close related with each other.
And so why don't other companies set up a similar system as DBS if it works so well?
I think they fear the consequences because when you really do it like this, and stick very, very strong to that philosophy over the time, face some trade-offs. Yeah. So for example, when it comes to budgeting, the budgeting rule is like take the P&L from last year and deduct 5%. Yeah. But when you do this multiple times, with each round you take, things will become much more difficult and difficult. And the DBS should help you to improve the productivity. But, and now comes the but, it only brings in the relevant results when you are able to use the people which might be left due to productivity increase according to your growth. So this is why growth is the engine for all that. And you need to have both. You need to have the growth approach in the DNA later on. You need to have the DBS. And this is something people fear. And also for sure, over time, as this company culture really is very restricted to numbers, it's super simple. You don't make the numbers. You get asked why. You need to perform a problem-solving process, stick to the action plan, and make it happen. And hopefully you make it happen. Otherwise, you will be out pretty quick. Yeah. So, for example, when I was very surprised as I was in this committee for all the different OpCos, We met twice a year. And in each meeting, I had about 40%, so 40% new people on board. Yeah. Because the pressure is super high on the numbers.
So they're pretty relentless in focusing on numbers. And if you don't hit your numbers, then you're out the door.
When you don't hit your numbers, you need to run a problem-solving process and find ways to make it happen. And otherwise, you're pretty fast on performance improvement. But normally, when you go into the process of performance improvement, things become very, very difficult. So, yeah, and normally what I've seen so far, people then by themselves decide that this kind of company is not a meaningful one for themselves.
How would you describe that culture? How does it feel to be an employee?
This is a very, very difficult one because the different companies or the different sites are more or less bought together. And so for sure, each company and each site brings in its own culture. But over the year, and as they become part of a platform or part of a DNA company, they start to lose this culture because they have to embrace the DBS culture. And the issue is like, either you embrace it or you exit. And so a lot of people like it, yeah, really like to become part of the DBS because it's really cool to go for improvements and stuff like that. But the downside is, in the same situation, you need to grow. In case you are not able to grow, you have a problem with all that process improvements because then you have a lot of people left over. For sure, then you need to go for layoffs. Yeah.
And does that create a lot of pressure for employees?
Yes, definitely. Every department, every opco, every site, every opco, every platform is running to about 7 different indicators, key indicators, performance indicators. And it's really broken down from the strategy to the policy deployment to the daily management. And everybody sticks to this every single day. And for sure, one part of the DBS culture is also to make things transparent and to make also things ugly. Yeah, so for example, we always said red is the new green. So for example, we put some targets and then if you have reached all the targets and you become green, 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 we skip the targets, boost to the next level. So everything more or less is red again, right? And this brings to the people a lot of pressure and a lot of folks can't really deal with this, right? But I think it's not so bad because you have a constant improvement, right? And it also is very depending on the site leader or opco leader, how you really deal with these things. Yeah, and really explain to the people that red is nothing bad, but it is like a chance, like an opportunity, right? But therefore, they really have to also embrace the culture because normally as they were brought together, they bring in their own their old culture, and in the old culture, red was something negative.
And how are the employees incentivized at the ground level to really buy into this culture?
Well, the issue is like what I've seen so far is that they can be part of the culture as they learn the different tools, as they improve by themselves, as they also can do a lot of job rotations and stuff like that, but also always related to results. When it comes to the payment, everybody also got the bonus, right? Related to some company results and so on the one hand. On the other hand, people have to be developed. This is, I think, something which is not too bad, that every leader of every department or every manager of every department, opco site or whatever, needs to take care for his people and also develop the people and also document this in a consistent system. And if he does not do it, he really has some trouble with his boss. But also this is on the one side pretty good, but on the other side also a lot of people don't want to be developed. Yeah, for example, a forklifter or a driver for a forklift in the warehouse, he comes here to do the job, get the money, goes home. That's it. Yeah, no fancy stuff. He does not want to become the new vice president in logistics, right? So how do you want to develop people like this? Yeah, or in situations like that. And development also was always mandatory for everyone. And then the next issue is also, Danaher did pretty great on a survey. Once a year, they conducted a survey, an anonymous survey consisting of 50 to 60 questions with different categories. And every manager was measured according to the results of this anonymous survey with the clear task to improve various things. Yeah. So for example, when the engagement index is not so high, you got a clear message. You need to improve the engagement index by whatever percentages. And then even things are anonymous for sure. You have to find ways, because this is an annual approach, that within the next survey, your results become much, much more better. And you really need to do this. Otherwise, you are in trouble, your boss is in trouble, and it gets really straight upward to your president of the platform.
So it seems a very meticulous culture, the focus, you know, rigorous focus on numbers, outputs, performance, but also leads to this, you know, continuous improvement mentality, which drives profitability and the quality of the company. So how do you view the pros and cons of the potential high pressure environment and stressful environment versus the performance and the output?
In my opinion, this is when it comes to the point of leadership. I think if you have the right people in place with proper leadership skills, you can deal with this. And as I've been in charge or in contact also with a lot of different operation companies and sites, according to my role, I saw very different setups. Setups where you had very strong leaders. So the morale of the staff was pretty good. Yeah. And they really could deal with this in a very, very good, like a sportive environment, right? Where you have some kind of challenges and you see really like in sports. But I also had not so strong leaders. And when you saw them, then it was really painful because they had shirts on and in the back of the shirt, it was printed "Go to Gemba," but you never recognized them in a production site or in a warehouse. Yeah, so the consistency was failing, right? And with this setups, and also the moral of the staff was totally different. And also the pressure there was, maybe it was the same as in the other opco I described, but from a perception point of view of the staffing, the people felt much more under pressure and much more inconvenient.
So looking at the structure of the organization, you mentioned how you had a role that looked over a mayor for logistics and transportation. How is Danaher structured between the different divisions they had, life sciences, diagnostics, etc.?
I mean, this is constantly moving, but at those days when I was there, they had, five different platforms. Each platform was pretty independent. So there was the life science, there was the cancer diagnostics, there was the dental platform, I think it's sold already, there was the marking and the water platform, right? And everybody's pretty independent in the platform, but they are pretty of synergies in the enabling functions. And this is where they really collaborate strongly. So meaning, when it comes to procurement, we really leveraged our complete power also cross platform and cross opco. When it came to IT, even we had different IT systems in place, but nevertheless, we also used their leverages. And for sure, when it came to transportation and logistics, we really leveraged our complete entities and opcos for buying power with the freight forwarding companies. So this went pretty well. Within the platform, for sure, you had much stronger collaboration. Yeah. Also, there are people with a market approach. You sometimes went into the market with different companies, but each company offered a different segment of a process, for example. Yeah. So this was and shared a lot of things. And one thing I forgot also, cross-platform was the DBS, because also the DBS guys and also the trainers for the DBS, and especially for the problem-solving process, they also acted in various platforms and across various opcos. And this was also very good, because then you changed your know-how and you brought in different perspectives and views from other sites, from other countries, from other market requirements and so on. And so you could really leverage also these things.
For Leica, for example, they operate within the diagnostics vertical. Were they using their own logistics network, or were they actually combining with, they were outsourcing to third freight forwarders?
Yeah, I mean, like I was like this, all of the companies, we had some preferred forwarders, and every company, like Leica, for example, managed the preferred forwarders. From the Danaher itself, we got some quotations, pricings, and let's say general guiding rules. Yeah. And then it was operated by the local opcos. And for sure, each opco always needed to go to find good solutions for themselves, also from a costing perspective, to improve performance and also the competitiveness. Yeah, most of the things done by third parties, so 3PL logistics. For sure, we also had some own warehouses, but the clear trend was to go for outsourced situations where they really had the experts.
And then what you do is you use the scale between Leica, Beckman, or Radiometer, right, and put all that volume through the forwarders.
Exactly, we did this like this. Yeah, and also then, for sure, we also had some common approaches like consolidated streams from China, where multiple opcos joined forces to have, like, on a train approach, complete containers every week and stuff like that. So, but this was then inspired in that committee, for example, for all opcos. But then it was to be chosen by each logistic manager of the different divisions or different parts of the complete Danaher company, whether they cooperate or collaborate or not, what made the most sense for them. Yeah, but for sure there were clear rules and guidance in place, and you could also do something different, but only in case you had very good arguments from a performance or costing perspective.
Mm. So you used to run Leica logistics for Leica, and so there was a head of logistics for each, for Beckman, for Radiometer.
Yeah,
for
exactly. Radio. Exactly.
And they reported into a head of diagnostic logistics, or was there?
They normally reported to the vice president or president of their own opco. So in my case, in Leica. Yeah. But on the same side, we had from the platform one guy taking care for all logistics topics across Europe and one guy taking care for all logistics topics across the globe. Yeah. And the same also happened for procurement, finance, and so on. So you always had the connection to the platform.
Right. And that was your role to drive synergies between the other opcos in the platform.
Exactly. And this guy, for example, the European guy for logistics, he had a committee of, I cannot remember, maybe four or five different people. And together with him, we then looked for synergies across the different opcos. Yeah, for example, we see that there are multiple sites in China, multiple production sites in China, for example, and they all have to deliver something into, let's say, Europe, for example. And then, where are the locations? Yeah, maybe it would be a good approach to combine these forces, like on a bias consolidation model, having like a streamed approach to Europe, for example. Yeah. Or when it was about the situation, we have some kind of requirement for parcels. So we now let's do a parcel tender together. Yeah. Or now when it came, for example, the situation of the upcoming Brexit some years ago, then for sure, we also thought about, how can we do this? Because multiple Danaher companies were sitting in the UK, had multiple warehouses in the UK, and so on and so on. And then we thought about, how can we deal with the Brexit scenario? And then for sure, we organized two times a year something like a summit, where then also best practices were shared. And we also then had some global guidelines, gave some global guidelines or some global rules where we could support these people in the opcos, right?
I mean, when you look at the potential economies of scale at Danaher, how do you look at the opportunities going forward to drive more scale and cost savings in distribution and logistics for the business?
I think it has multiple layers. From a pure freight perspective, there's always music in it, because as the company is growing and growing and growing, for sure also your spend volume increase, right? And also, as we now found out, opportunities to sell also to customers freight while using our good conditions, for sure the boost increases. Yeah. So this is, there's always potential. Yeah. And as far as I was there, always it was pretty clear every OPCO every year in transport and logistics, 5%. This was mandatory, right? So the next issue is, and this has been discussed multiple times, but the execution was a little bit, normally when you would look at the footprint of all the Danair companies, you might see that you have redundancies in warehouses or in distribution centers, for example. And there's, in my opinion, still a lot of music, a lot of potential in it for consolidations. I mean, I had this in Leica only, and I, for example, consolidated only in EMEA 7 warehouses.
You consolidated the product and then put it for a freight forwarder, or you mean you shut them down and merged them into one larger facility?
We moved it to a larger facility. We needed to perform a center of gravity analysis, for example, and also increase the capabilities of that kind of center. Yeah. And then we merged them.
From different OPCOs?
No, we only did it for Leica.
And so you had a hard 5% per year decrease in the total OPEX for Leica every year, no matter what?
It was more than 5%. Yeah, I did this for EMEA. I had a counterpart in Asia and I had a counterpart in the US. We all did this. And for example, only for EMEA, I had each year 7 digits net cost reductions in EMEA every single year.
And that's 5% of sales that you had to decrease the cost by?
I cannot remember exactly how much it was from sales, but it was pretty substantial. I mean, my task was within the matrix. I was going for the matrix called OMEX, so operative margin expansion, cash flow. So this is the stock situation. And I also went for delivery, which is the on-time delivery. These were my three matrix I need to perform.
And you had hard targets for those three.
Yeah. And normally the issue is like I've said it, you just take the P&L from last year and you take 5% off, but you really want to be very sure. So my approach with my managers was always to have a funnel at least of 7 to 9%. Yeah. And out of that, for sure, we made it happen. So we always came in with, I think 7 or 8%.
Is that the absolute target though? Because let's say I'm doing $1 billion in sales and I have, you know, 500 million in costs. If I take 5% of that, but my sales grow 10%, I'm going to have to do even less costs on a larger sales base.
Yeah, this was a very good question. When I was pretty new and like I was for sure growing, I got my first budgeting and then it was communicated to me, okay, Bruno, you need to cut down 5% of the costs. And then I asked, yeah, but we grow. Let's assume 8%. And then my nice guy from the platform said, hey, Bruno, what did you not understand? So no matter how the growth is, you go down with the costs. Yeah. And I mean, okay, we did it then for sure. And I was not sure whether he took it that serious or not, but we had this for sure as a stretch target. And my task was pretty clear to make it happen. We always did.
Where's the limit? Where's the limit with Kaizen and continuous improvement? Like, how much can you really take out in cost before you start hurting the product or, you know?
I think there's no really limit. And I tell you why. Because one major part of the DBS culture is the so-called problem-solving process, the PSP. And the PSP is run in two different ways. And across Danaher, there are about 200 PSP trainers for all facilities and all companies. I also was one of them, right? And you, as I mentioned, you do it in two ways. You can have some cost problems or some created problems. A cost problem is, for example, when you were able to do something and all by a sudden you fail. Yeah, let's say, for example, you always had an on-time delivery of 95% and all by a sudden, boop, it drops to whatever, 92 or whatever. Yeah. And then for sure, you need to find out what's the case, what's the story, what's the root cause and fix this. Yeah. Okay. This is one issue. And this is normally the old Kaizen approach as we see it in many industries. Okay. But now comes the second one. The second one is, for example, you go for a created problem. So for example, you say, okay, today I have logistic costs of, let's make a simple example, of 6 euros per line, per picked line, pick, pack and shipped line, And now my created problem says, I want to go for a cut by half approach. Yeah. So my target is to really cut this by half. So my target would be then not 6 euros, but 3 euros. Yeah. So normally when you now reflect about it, you would say, this is not possible. Yeah. Because the assumption that they did really that bad before is totally unrealistic. So, but when you are going for such a fantastic approach, you really need to think out of the box. And then you find ways to go for this. I mean, let me give you a short example on that. When I had my first meeting with the 3PL or with one 3PL, I was in that situation. And then I told him, look, we really need to go down with the costs by 5%, because everything must go down 5%. And then he looked at me and smiled and said, look, my friend, I am a 3PL. I am a contract logistics company. I don't have 5% profitability, because my profitability is about 4 to 5%. And if I give it all to you, I'm at the zero or even negative. So this is not how it works. Yeah. And then I said, yes, I understand this, but no matter what, we need to go for this. So, and now creativity is needed. So what did I do? For example, I said, look, I see your point, and I also want that you benefit from that approach. And then we went for a gain share approach, meaning we agreed on, for example, to have a common program starting with a VSM workshop and later on some checkpoints and some dynamic pricing, where we said, okay, what we really take a deep look on the complete process, also from the Leica side, but also from the 3PL side. What we find, we share 50-50, but these are the activities we drive together to bring prices down and to bring costs down and to increase profitability on his side and on our side. And we did this, yeah? And this 3PL, for example, was very, very astonished what we could do. And also our people were pretty impressed what we could do, because we had, the 3PL was running on very, very low costs and has been benchmarked for various years from a costing perspective and always seems to be super, super low. Yeah. And with this VSM, as I mentioned, we identified multiple cost drivers, also meaning that we needed to change something on the Leica biosystems side, but also some things on his side. And in the end, we more than cut the price per line by half. Yeah. And it was not so complicated. Yeah. And for sure, I mean, in the second phase, year after, we could not do the next 50% approach. This would not work, but we could go for further improvements. So the next 5% were easily in. Yeah.
How would you describe the essence of DBS?
The DBS is like the DNA of the whole thing, right? It is about transparency, involvement, and I think also permanent improvement. Yeah, really reflect positions, really reflect what it is. Yeah, and then use methodology and also the PDCA cycle to make things happen. Make things happen in action plans, but then really monitor this very rigid. Yeah. This is really painful. In the beginning, I hated it also to be monitored every single week. Yeah, have I done this, and this? And then all by a sudden, I asked someone, man, I'm grown up. I don't need to do this. But then after some time, I realized that with that kind of rigid monitoring, you really gain traction. Yeah, because normally whatever happens, first question is, do you run a PSP? Second question is, do you have an action plan? Third question is, do you execute the action plan? And the last question is your action plan bringing the projected results? And if you fail to say yes, you always go one back.
What's the most important point of that process?
The most important point, I think, is to go away from perceptions and assumptions but to really go on the Gemba and for sure do some analytics on the Gemba, find out the root causes, not as a solo activity, but in a team approach, not blaming anyone, right? But really going to find it and then make it happen.
How do you make it happen?
You need to identify potential countermeasures. You need to test them on small scale. And if they work on small scale, then you bring it on large scale. And how do you do this? You have an action plan. You do the monitoring every single week. Really stick very clear to your plan. I mean, with the action plan normally should tell you about the gap, which delta you will close with which action. And then you just make the calculation or the pulse check in reality, whether it flies or not.
Okay, so if I'm an employee working for you at Leica, you would come in the meeting and ask me if I have a PSP.
Yes.
And how does the PSP work?
Yeah, PSP works like, I mean, before you can do things like that, you need to take a training course. Yeah. PSP works like that. You have like a dive model. Yeah. Where you learn, for example, how to define a problem, how to verify the situation, how to investigate on the root causes, and then later on how you go for sustainability. Yeah. So this is it. And it starts with how to state the problem. Or just to give you an example, most people fail to really articulate a problem. So for example, what I'm hearing pretty often is, for example, well, my goods entry is too slow. Okay. What does this mean, it's too slow? Do I need 2 days or 5 days or whatever? So next question would be, what is the standard? How fast should it be? Next question is this a one-time observation or is this like a trend and stuff like that? And you see this with multiple companies that they act like that. So they really are very busy, but they waste their resources for randomness more or less. Yeah. And normally everything starts by the definition of a problem. So you really need to be clear how to define a problem. And therefore you have the tags. So tags means you need to have an action, a clear actual, a clear goal or a target. You need to have a delta and you need to have a trend so that you see, is it a one-time wonder which you try to chase, or is it something which somehow meanders in some kind of direction? So, and the next issue, then also you should be very clear about the rationale. So why should we work on this problem and not on another one? Yeah. Therefore, you should be clear about the consequences of what happens if you just do nothing, right? So now you have the definition. When you have the definition done, next thing is you need to be clear who can help you to solve this. Therefore, you do the investigation. Investigation you can do with multiple analytic activities. You can perform Ishikawa diagram, for example. Or you can go for the Bob or Wow approach. Or you can go for the value stream map or what the hell ever. There are tons of stuff. And in the end, you will find out for sure during the investigation some kind of a Pareto principle situation. So meaning that only a few things are related to quite the heavy impact, right? So and out of that, then you derive the Pareto 1, so which gives you like the overview, and then you try to slice and dice a little bit so that you get to more details, yeah? So the Pareto 1 normally deals about the what, and then the Pareto 2 normally deals about where does this appear. And out of that, then you got some pretty good hints where to dive deeper to come to the root causes. And then you need for sure to involve more people or multiple people, the experts, and then really go to Gemba, really go and observe it by yourself with the team together, and then really go for the 5-Y approach and the root causes. Yeah. And out of the root causes, then you can find some countermeasures. When it's about the countermeasures, you normally have two types of countermeasures. Normally you have permanent ones. So for example, you really find something and you can change it for a permanent approach, or you have some countermeasures which are only temporary. So it's like the fire brigade. So you, for example, you install a total quality wall or 100% quality inspection or whatever, unless you really know about the specific issue to fix the specific issue of the root cause and have it sustainably. So now you have done the investigation. Then later on, now with your countermeasures, now you go to verify your countermeasures. Is this what you really thought of also bringing in the relevant results to close the delta? So you need to verify this. Yeah. So you have to test it out, do try storming, or in the US, I think they say use bullets and then cannonballs. So you really do something like empiric creativity. You try out, and then if it's good, you really pamper it with strong resources. And when you have done this, you go for the sustainability. So normally in the beginning, you put this in the daily management to really see whether it stays in the new preferred situation. If yes, super good. So after some time, you fade it also out of the daily management because it's fixed. So this is normally how problem solving process.
Danaher has, you mentioned 200 PSP trainers.
Exactly. So you cannot say, hey, I want to be a PSP trainer. You need the recommendation of a vice president to be educated on this. Then you run through various training courses. Then you also have to prove that you can, that you have run successfully various PSP activities by yourself sustainably. And then after that, you can co-teach a PSP class. And after that, you are a PSP trainer. And you can teach PSP, or you should teach PSP classes, PSP courses across the globe, across all the different opcos.
And it seems really strict in terms of
It is. So, for example, during the board meetings, there's no PowerPoint, or in a lot of opcos, there's no PowerPoint. They always also on that level work with the PSP approach. So they really okay, this is the problem, these are the tags, so this is why we do it, this is the rationale, and then this is the Pareto and this is the action plan. So very, very rigid, very strict, and also very, it's like a language, I would say, almost, right? But it's also very good, I think, because you know better than I do that within the PowerPoint, PSP is about facts and figures, numbers talk, that's it, yeah? In PowerPoint, you can have a lot of fancy stuff and so you can influence people, let's say, beyond facts and figures, right? And then it has pretty close on facts and figures only.
Why is the PSP process so difficult to copy?
This is a good question. I think the PSP process is difficult to copy because we all have some kind of bad habits. Especially the more manager you are or the more higher you're in hierarchy, the more bad habits you might have with regard on you forget to listen. So it seems that sometimes we like to jump to conclusions without having understood the proper question. This is a problem. And it lacks of discipline, yeah? And PSP is nothing you can say, okay, today I do a PSP and tomorrow I have the proper answer. No, it's not, yeah? So the result is not appearing immediately, but it appears, and then you have it sustainably. Yeah. And this is why, or this is where a lot of companies fail with.
Yeah? And it also seems like most companies wouldn't want such a strict and rigid culture like that, potentially.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I can honestly tell you at my current company, I have now also introduced PSP because I really strongly believe as this brings in maximum traction. I think any kind of fundamentalism is not so good. But I think, nevertheless, you can like the Chinese, always go for the Chinese approach saying what is really good, you take it and you adopt it to your specific situation. And so it's a very good tool. I also trained my people now here in my new company and also told them pretty clear, we now want to go on a PSP approach. And all of a sudden what happens, for sure, they get a lot of benefits. Is this the 100% traction yet? No. It's not, because I'm not going that rigid, but it's much better than without. And I think this is where also people should go for this. I mean, in various automotive companies, they copied it because it's not so Danaher specific. It's, I think also the Danaher people, they adopted it from the Toyota people. But I mean, it's good to know methodology, but you really also have to apply it, right? Otherwise, yeah.
And culture is the biggest barrier then to actually fully adopt a DBS-like system.
Yeah. And I mean, then it's about the leadership. When the leadership team clearly says, look, in my board meetings, there are no PowerPoints. I only want to stick to numbers. That's a clear message. Yeah. So either you want to present a topic in the board meeting, then you stick to the rules or you don't. Yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge for you adopting principles from Danaher at your new company?
I would say here in Germany, the culture is different. Yeah. So different also in the way that people feel like grown-ups. Yeah. People feel pretty experienced and educated and so on. And if you tell them, hey, in principle, yeah, thank you very much. What you have done in the past, it was pretty good. But today we do something very different, and you more or less forget everything. This is a little bit not so easy. So it was a little bit, okay, now we have to apply to a new tool. And okay, yeah, but the PSP is not a tool, it's a mindset. Yeah. And I think also to bring in the real traction, you really also have to live according to that, right? Don't go for perceptions, don't go for assumptions, just stick to the numbers. We don't blame anyone, we learn together and improve together, yeah? But we try to avoid the same mistakes a second time, right? And this is something, also the issue that you allow a culture of making mistakes, but only one time and learn out of it. This is different, yeah? People, how shall I say it? They need to get used to that kind of mindset, right? And I know also in many, many companies, we send emails to each other with multiple people in copy. So everybody theoretically knows, but no one acts. No. For me, also here in my new company, I said, no, people in copy on an email, except of necessity, but only not on a standard as an exception, more or less, right? So...
Did Danaher use email, or how do they
yeah,
use
it? They also use email. They also use email, but also in a way that people take responsibility. Yeah. But also this is depending on your leadership. Normally the people in the leadership team, they look, for me, numbers talk. And I really don't care about you informed him and her and what the hell ever. You bring the numbers, you don't bring the numbers. If you cannot bring the numbers, what can we do that we bring in the numbers? Yeah. So I always say, okay, what is good is named good. What is not good also means we name it not good or we name it bad. And then together we think and reflect, what can we do to make it good? Yeah. And no excuses. Yeah. Because the CC function always is abused like an excuse. Yeah. I told him or he should know. Bullshit. No. Yeah. There are people responsible.
CC is banned then in your company. Was it banned at Danaher as well? Or?
I don't know. I would not say it was banned, but it was not used too strongly.
And so how did the changes you make in this system drive a competitive advantage for Leica?
Well, the advantage was on multiple areas. Number one, for sure, the OMEX was growing pretty clear. Yeah. But the second thing is also your capabilities grow. So, for example, I boosted the on-time delivery from around 90% to 98% across EMEA. And also, I increased the capability of the major DC in Europe in a way that you would be capable to place an order by 4 p.m. And even if it's a dangerous goods, next morning, 9 a.m., it would arrive in the hospital in London. And when I started, this was not the case. The capability was, the cutoff time was maybe 12 o'clock or something like that, right? So we changed quite strongly, right?
When we look at how DBS can be applied, is there any limitations to the type of company or that you can apply this system?
I don't really think so. I think you can apply it everywhere. You can also apply it in the service sector or in the intellectual property sector or creativity sector. Maybe creativity is a little bit difficult, because when it comes to creativity, I mean, we also applied it in the creativity arena for innovations and stuff like that. But I think maybe this is not the most powerful approach, because normally the very creative people, they don't like to stick to some kind of standards.
And also, you've got tangible and intangible assets, right? So if you take, when you've got tangible assets, you can increase inventory turns or easily cut out OPEX. But how do you see this system being applied to, you know, intangible assets or software companies, for example?
Yeah, I think it's not so very different, because, for example, you can say in a software, I mean, for sure, in a software, you can, I mean, the PSP approach, for example, for sure, you have the standard, and for sure, sometimes you fail on the standard. So you can have a cost problem, or you might say, okay, now I have a whatever program, like the, I don't know, and if, maybe a database search or whatever, and it takes whatever of time. And now I wanna cut this kind of time by half. So you also can apply that methodology. So I think it really helps. Would all tools be applicable? I don't think so. But also in the tangential world, not all tools are applicable for everything. So you really have to be clear. For example, a value stream map, you can do everywhere, in my opinion, tangible or non-tangible. A PSP, the same. 5S, for example, bar a little bit different. Okay, maybe it depends a little bit. But things like, for example, a SMED, you only can do in the tangible world, not in the intangible world. It's pretty clear, yeah? But okay, besides that, yeah. And I think it is depending on how you want to bring this type of culture in, how you want to live with it. I think daily management also in a software company, for example, is absolutely mandatory. If you don't have daily management, I think your traction is close to zero, or you just guess around more or less. And daily management does not mean that I want to monitor the people, but it means that we, every morning, we align on a certain status, right? And everybody's on the same chapter and on the same page, right? And therefore, it is super mandatory to have things like that in place, yeah? And so I personally see no limitations. I mean, I once, not in Denia, but in another company, I have introduced a T-card system, for example, for process confirmation. And this T-card system has been adopted by PricewaterhouseCoopers, and they are not a tangible company, and they used it then for their processes in the offices, for sure with different content, but the same methodology.
And what could you do for sales and marketing efficiency at a software company, for example, using DBS?
I mean, for a sales and marketing company or campaign, we have, for example, you can run a PSP on the leads of a campaign and then try to find out why certain regions perform different from other ones, and go with that kind of methodology in this area. And then really out of that, identify some root causes, put in some countermeasures in place. Yeah.
It's just a mindset that can be applied to any business, but it does seem like the real savings could be somewhat different when you have tangible assets versus intangible assets.
It's hard to judge. I mean, we also did this, for example, for sales. Yeah. And I mean, sales revenue is... dollars are dollars, right? And for example, also there we saw that different regions performed differently from other regions, and it was not by the first sight evident what's the reason why. But when we, for example, then was digging deep, we found out that during the sales funnel build, there's been no standard work. So one region had no standard work, or as there was no standard work in one region, they failed to build a proper sales funnel. And out of that insufficient sales funnel maturity, also the related sales later on were too low in comparison to the targets. Yeah, at the first sight, you would not have recognized things like that because you would not have seen it, right? And but with such a PSP approach, for example, we identified things like that. And sales is pretty, I mean, the pure number, for sure, there are some things underneath it, but the pure number is pretty intangible, right?
What are the limitations to DBS?
It depends how you really see DBS. Is it the box of methodology? I don't know. Is it maybe a mindset? For mindset, I think there's no limitation at all.
Maybe it's the rigid culture or the...
Yeah.
There could be the downside.
A trade-off could really be that you all by a sudden become fundamentalistic. Yeah. Because then it's too rigid. Then maybe you lose creativity. Yeah, so I think you need to balance it out a little bit. Try to take the benefits, try to really go for that approach, but not over-exaggerate, right? And I think that the Denner folks, and this is why I think that they have such a high turnover rate in the staffing, in the management staffing, they sometimes over-exaggerate a little bit. But this also really relates to leadership, because some opcos have good turnover rates and some have not good turnover rate, and this is really depending on the leadership. You cannot have a vice president team which consists of people where only one or two guys are longer than 2 years in. This makes not the real sense.
So when the leadership moves more towards the fundamentalist or rigid structure and less of the creativity in the PSPs and problem solving, you tend to get a higher turnover.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
How do they encourage that creativity at Danaher?
I cannot really tell you, but I think the Danaher headquarters, they realized that kind of point. So they also put to the major matrix relevant for everybody, also the turnover rate. And so you, for example, when you as a site or you as a company have a too high turnover rate, you have to explain to your platform, and the platform has to explain to the board in Washington. And I can tell you, when you fail with these seven major indicators, you are in real trouble.
Yeah.
So you better don't fail. And also they are related, and this is pretty interesting, they are related to the bonus of the management team. So they are for sure always in favor that they don't fail on one, because the bonus is calculated on a multiplication. So if something is very bad, for example, you have bad luck, because it does not matter that you have the other elements of the equation very positive. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And when looking back then at your experience with DBS, what were the biggest lessons you learned in applying that system?
One of the biggest lessons I've learned was how powerful problem-solving process is. I would not have thought about that earlier. Not that strong. For sure, the methodology is known to me since ever, and Lean, I've been doing Lean for at least 20 years now or something like that.
But everyone does Lean as well, right? I mean, this is, they do all these different Six Sigma or different.
Yeah.
What is so different about DBS?
I think the real difference is that it's about numbers. In the end, it's about the relation between the strategy and the policy deployment and the daily management. It's pretty simple. Only very few indicators, not measuring tons of stuff with no impact. And then using the DBS to make it happen, to make it visual, to solve the problems, to identify the problems, or to go for the crazy stuff in the future. I think this is different. When it comes to Six Sigma, they only go for the process variation or the cleaning out of the process variation. Well, it's a good approach, but therefore you need to be very, very mature already upfront. This is why, in my opinion, most of the companies fail, and they also fail as they, to really be successful in a Six Sigma, it takes you a hell of a discipline and also a hell of daily discipline, and this is, you fail, yeah? Or at least what I've seen most companies failed. They did such campaigns 4 or 5 years, and after 4 or 5 years, the board of directors says, okay, where are the results? And the results were pretty limited. Yeah.
And it's that PSP start at the beginning that seems to be somewhat unique to Danaher.
Yeah, exactly. The really PSP as one of the major elements in the DBS toolbox, I think this is the key. I normally tell my people, to be successful, you only need three things to know. Number one is you must be familiar with PSP. Number two is you must be with situational leadership. And the third thing is you need to know about the theory of constraints. And then with this together, you have, I would say, 85%, and the rest is a little bit experience and luck. That's it.
What do you think are the biggest limitations to Danaher growing to other sectors?
The growth in the Danaher, boy, this is complicated. I think they have the ultimate cash flow machine. I think as long as this works, they can finance the growth. Because what Danaher is doing is, from a growth perspective, for sure the different opcos grow organically, but also by acquisitions, or majorly by acquisitions. And to finance acquisitions, you need a lot of cash flow. And the cash flow you generate by the high OMEX, by the high margins, on the one hand, and the permanent cost reductions on the one hand, but also you make it as from time to time they sell some divisions on the stock market.
Yeah. Do you think they could move into software or some of these higher intangible asset-based businesses?
I think they can, and I think they are. I mean, I cannot speak for Danaher as a whole, but I can tell you, in the Leica Biosystems company, we already were in this field, as we had the cancer diagnostics. We had one company dealing with, let's say AI algorithms to identify patterns and giving the oncologist the hint where to look. So we were not, from a legal perspective, allowed to make complete AI diagnosis, but the AI algorithm and the imaging related to this gave the oncologist the hint what could be the case or where he should look.
And you were still applying DBS in that type of business?
Yeah. Same situation, standard work, daily management, and all that related stuff, PSP,
How would you advise other companies, industrial businesses, to apply DBS?
I would say leadership team must be clear about what they want. And then I would say go with the basics. I mean, we need to know, therefore, how every kind of organization is working. It's also not so brand new, but you need to know that you have some kind of discipline impact, reliability impact, methodology impact. So these three are the base of any organizations. And then on top of that, you then have the creativity and the self-motivation and the passion. Yeah. So most people and most companies forget that these three I mentioned earlier are the base. If you fail with the base, you cannot make it in the top. Even Google is doing it like what I explained, right? And every kind of organization from a social point of view works like this. So meaning for a DBS approach or a lean approach, you first need to go for involvement of the people and then daily management. Make things visible, yeah? And then train the people about the different types of ways. Yeah, this is then the next step, make things meaningful. And then you can go with the methodology of the PSP and all the other stuff, right? But you need to have the daily management first. Yeah. And it must be driven from the CEO or from the board of directors. Otherwise, it's just a Mickey Mouse approach like a lot of other things, right? So, and then also tied pretty clear to the involvement of the people. Most companies, in my opinion, also fail as they hire one or two guys and they really think that these two guys, they can fix it. This is total misperception. They can be the inspirators, yeah? They can be the people bringing in the methodology, but they need to inspire the people. And my good advice would always be to measure something like the total maturity of a group. So how many people of your total population took part in a Kaizen event or in a lean training or whatever activity within the last 6 months? Because otherwise you only have the five people being interested in this topic, doing here something or there something. And then also, DBS or lean is about empowerment and also commitment from the people. But if only the so-called experts are doing the improvements, the normal staff just lays back and say, oh, okay, just wait. Now the experts are coming in. They hopefully know what's good or not, and they will fix it. But this is not how it works. And for sure, the results are not existing in the end.
And Bruno, if you were to analyze a company from the outside looking in to see how good they would apply a system like DBS or their own kind of system, how would you look to analyze companies to really understand how good they are operationally, similar to Danaher?
I mean, it depends on the kind of industry and the kind of company. But what I would do very first is to have a Gemba walk, either through the offices or when it's a software company or things like that, or through the shop floor or through the logistics area. And I think when you just walk through, you can see immediately what's going on or not. And you can easily see like things where they have some daily management in place, where they have tons of matrix on the wall and a lot of fancy graphics, But in the end, in my opinion, this is showtime. This makes zero sense and zero traction, So you can easily see, is it meaningful? Is it updated? Do the people stick to what they do? Or is it just showtime, right? This is pretty easy. And then for sure, you can also see how people move. I mean, not that they are in a hurry or that they are running or so. No. It's just about when you enter a fabrication, for example, is anybody try to hide? I'm not here. Please don't ask me something. I might give you a bad answer or whatever. No, but if you come in and everybody's friendly and proud of what he's doing, and I mean, even it's only putting four screws in a plastic molded part or whatever, you can see this immediately, in my opinion.
What other companies, apart from Danaher, are great at this type of operation or efficiency?
I think the Toyota guys are great in that kind of methodology. But besides, honestly speaking, I've seen a lot of companies thinking they were great, but not being really great.
Who's the best apart from Danaher, in your opinion?
Maybe Toyota. Yeah, maybe Toyota.